Hello, creative people. Before you get to listen to this amazing podcast, I wanted to acknowledge and apologize for the sound quality. We had a little computer glitch, but I wanted to keep this conversation going because it was amazing with Sue Thones. So just disregard the sound quality and listen to the conversation. Thank you. Enjoy. Hello, creative people. Welcome to Creative Conversations. My name is Hollis Citron, and we are so truly happy and grateful that you have chosen to spend this hour with us. So a little background on the podcast. I am owner and founder of I Am Creative and Express Yourself Publishing. My mission, I am so excited about, is to expand the societal definition of creativity beyond a pencil and a paintbrush and empower people, especially adults, to own their talents that come in so many different forms. So what is the beauty of this space is that I get to talk to people that have all different jobs, hobbies, and interests, and we get to have a conversation about their experiences and perspectives, all centered around three simple questions. One, how do you define creativity? Two, how do you incorporate it into your life? And three, why do you think that it's important? And then we have a free-flowing conversation and we see where it goes. And so many incredible things come up every time. So I have been so grateful to have spoken to such a wide variety of people. Real estate agents, personal organizer, lawyer, Reiki masters, doctor, and so many more. And the idea is that by sharing their stories, we get to explore the space of expressing yourself, giving yourself permission to take time for your interests and explore possibilities. And I promise you, by doing this and incorporating it into your life daily, you will feel more empowered, connected, and dare I say, happy. So on that note, I suggest you check out all that's going on with I Am Creative and Express Yourself Publishing. There are so many opportunities for you to be able to experience a variety of things. I have experiential kits you can dive into and find out about your creative shway and what that is. There is opportunities to be in a multi-author book. So much going on. You don't have to have any experience. The whole idea is that you get to dive in and explore and play and have fun. We get stuck in all of this adulting stuff. Enough of that. So I want to introduce you to my inspiring guest for today, which I promise will be an amazing conversation. So my inspiring guest today is
Sue Thones. Sue is the founder of The Bend Project. She is an entrepreneur, a business coach, and mentor. Several years ago, life hit Sue hard when she lost her husband, her family business, and everything they had worked a lifetime for. As a former corporate executive and business owner, Sue felt helpless, and as she faced the realization that she was in her 50s, working for an hourly wage and drowning in debt, made choices and decisions, and she created this amazing space called the Bend Project. So Sue, welcome to the space.
Well, hello, Hollis, and happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday. Again, I apologize for all of that. That was totally on my end. When you're trying something different, like wearing headphones, totally messed everything up. So,
well, you know, I think anyway, if the season has taught us anything, it's that we just need to be flexible with whatever life throws at us, you know?
Exactly. Flexibility is such a good thing. So, Sue, I kept you have so much to say, so much in your bio. Please tell us a little bit more. Give us a little bit more of a backstory about who you are and your story before we dive into the questions, please.
Well, first of all, Hollis, thank you for allowing me to come on and share with your audience today. And my heart is always that in telling my story that I can add value to people, to encourage somebody else to, you know, maybe move forward into stepping into their purpose in life, and, you know, to just make their day better. So a little bit about myself. I'm 57 years old, so, which is hard for me to believe because I don't feel that old, but nonetheless, I've had a lot of life under me, and You know, like many people my age, I was a child of the 70s and 80s, and my parents, you know, I told me, you know, go to school, get an education, and to pursue a career. And that's exactly what I did. And I had a great corporate career for probably about 15, 16 years until, the corporate environment started to change. And I worked for great people. I worked for a big company. And because of that, I was afforded quite a bit of opportunity to explore different things, to use my gifts and talents in different ways, and you know, and it was great, but the landscape began to change. And you know, when I was in business college, nobody ever explained to me that when companies go and split their stock, one of the things that they will do is they'll get rid of employees, because employees are very expensive, number one, but number two, when you do that, you can immediately inject cash to your bottom line, which therefore values your stock at a different level. And nobody ever explained that lesson to me. So at the end of my corporate career, I wound up getting downsized several different times. And as you can imagine, you know, the older I was, the more experience I had, which, you know, from my perspective was a good thing. It also made me more expensive in the marketplace. And I never had looked at myself as a commodity, you know, until that point in time. And so I wound up going through a whole series of downsizings, and it was hard. It was hard because I always felt like I gave my best to the company, and you know, it was a part of who I was. And that was really probably the first time in my life I felt like my identity was questioned. And I went through, like I said, a series of downsizings, each one made, you know, just different, you know, different environments that it put me in. But I wound up with, my children were young at the time, and I wound up on airplanes, and I was traveling, and it was not, you know, the American dream that I had been pursuing graduating from college. And it was a hard season. But at the time, my late husband also had pursued his second career, had gone from owning a tree service. He went back to school to become a chiropractor, and he opened up his practice and got his practice to a point where I was able to step out of corporate America after I had gotten, I call, kicked out the last time. You know, you get downsized, you get separated, there's never any hope of counseling. And so I said, you know, they kicked me out. So I got kicked out the last time and was able to join him in his practice and come on and handle all the office management and insurance billing collections. And we did a lot of health and wellness talks together. He had a sports chiropractic business. And that was all great. We raised our girls. We had two businesses. We had a big, what I would say, a hobby farm. We had horses and cattle and other things. And, you know, life was great. And, you know, and I tell people this, is that I really didn't learn the lesson, which had happened to me in the first season of life, was that, you know, life can change. You know, I had gone through some things in my career and then was able to join my husband, but I didn't really grasp the lesson and put ourselves in a point of being prepared, or put a plan B or a plan C in place for life could change. And, you know, suddenly happened to me again. My husband's health failed, and he wound up passing away. And in all of that, because I was not a doctor, part of the law is in the state of Oregon, if you're not a physician, even though I owned all the shares of the stock for our company, I was not allowed to own the practice. So I had lost my husband, I lost the practice, and lost my job, lost everything. And then, unfortunately, was left with huge medical debt. So that's why I said, I lost everything in the process. And, you know, and life hit me very, very hard. And I found myself this time, instead of being in, you know, my late 30s, early 40s, I was in my 50s going, okay, what am I going to do now? I've been out of corporate America for a while, but, you know, hey, I've got all these skills. I've got this great education. I've been an executive. I've been a business owner. I'm marketable out in the marketplace. And did what any person my age would do, is, you know, hired a headhunter. And got nothing. And I found myself in my 50s being offered jobs for an hourly wage, going, oh my gosh, you know, I haven't been here since I've been 21 years old, you know, and what am I going to do? So, you know, I swallowed my pride, which, you know, I'll tell you, very hard, you know, because I thought, man, I've got, you know, these gifts and these talents, and I know what I can do. I know how I can perform, and nobody will give me a chance to use those in the marketplace. And that was a very hard season of my life. And again, losing everything to losing cars, losing our home, losing, you know, like I said, everything we worked for. But I said, you know, okay, Sue, you're in your 50s. What are you going to do? Are you going to wallow in poverty for the rest of your life? Or are you going to find some way to pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and move forward in life. And, you know, I wish I could say it was an overnight exercise. It was not. But I was fortunate in all of this to get connected to a group of business people who offered a business model with coaching and mentoring. And, you know, a business model is great. I said, I've got to own something. I've got to do something where I can put my effort in and I can get results alongside what I was doing, which was working for the hourly rate. And but it was the coaching and the mentoring, Hollis, that made all the difference in my life. And although I had had a corporate career, I had gotten management training, but I hadn't gotten coaching and mentoring. You know, a coach really is somebody who gives you skill set. You know, just like you look at, you know, if you played baseball, you'd have a hitting coach, you'd have a throwing coach, you know, all the different skill sets. And in life, you know, one of the things that I learned was, man, so you need a coach. You need somebody who's going to show you and teach you how to set goals for your life. You know, what does it look like? You're, you know, 52, 53 years old. Where do you want to go? You know, where are you and where do you want to go? And let's put a plan to get there. And then a mentor is something that's different. A mentor is somebody who really gives you perspective in life, who says, you know, I maybe have walked the walk that you've walked, and let me give you perspective, and let me give you my point of view on decisions that you're making, and pull you along so that I can maybe put you on my shoulders and help you achieve more in your life. And it was the combination of all those things that allowed me to get to the place where I am today. And which is a much different place. You know, I still miss my husband every day. It's been 7 years, and because we built a life together. But, you know, I want to take what happened to me and to use it to help other people, to say, hey, if you've been through life's tragedy, I've been there. Let me come alongside you and let me share with you maybe, you know, what I did to help myself get through, and you can make it. For people who life has been good, my message is, life is good. Now is a great time to be dream building, to be looking at your life and saying, where can you go from here? And this is where I love, this is the creativity, you know, and in my career, I was never encouraged to be creative. You know, I was encouraged to follow a model. And in this season of life, it's about being creative, about awakening that dream inside of all of us. You know, we all had it. And when we were little, we always dreamed of doing all these different things or being these different people or going these different places. And those dreams were written on our heart, and it doesn't matter how old you are, but it's about awakening those, you know. And exactly. When I coach people, I said, you know, what's that thing that if you were just exhausted and you were just spent, but you go and you do that thing, you know, like Hollis, it could be for you picking up a paintbrush, that all of a sudden you're just energized, you come to life. That's that, those dream sparks inside of you.
Exactly. So you know what? Before we do all this, I want to get to the questions because this is all going to come out so beautifully. And your story, that intro is, I mean, you do so many things that I love of what you said was really kind of like planning that, you know, making that plan B and that plan C. So many things are going so amazingly well, and you don't always think of that plan B and that plan C. So you created this space in order to really help people and, you know, be by their side. So they're not alone. So they're able to, make their way through it. And it's just a wonderful space that you've created. So I can't wait to really dive in more, and I want to welcome the people that came into the space. So welcome to the space. So happy that you're here. You can put any questions or comments into the text box, and yeah, we're happy to see them. So I'm going to start off with a would you rather question, and then we're going to dive into the first question. So Sue, would you rather have the ability to see 10 minutes into the future or 150 years into the future?
Well, you know, I think my first quick answer would always be, oh, 150 years, because then I could begin to put a plan together. But really, you know, if we really knew 10 minutes and we took life in 10-minute chunks, then at least from what I have learned, I think we really could be effective, you know. And that's, you know, again, like I said, my first gut reaction would be like, oh, give me the rest of my life. And then I would know what to do from here. But really, if you gave me 10 minutes And some of that 10 minutes could even be an attitude check. You know, make sure I'm present when I'm present. You know, where's my mindset at? You know, because what we do every moment really affects the rest of our life.
Yeah. Oh my, ooh, I love that. Yeah, that's so, it's true. And it's funny because I kind of was on the similar thought process as you. I thought, yeah, of course you go to people. You're like, tell me what's going to happen to me. But yeah, I agree with that whole with the 10 minutes, kind of just checking in and seeing how things are going and opening things up to see how they play out. Mm-hmm. So beautiful. Okay, so Sue, the first question is, how do you define creativity?
Well, I love that. You know, and I was thinking about that question also, actually this morning as I was doing some of my journaling. And you know, creativity to me is all about using our imagination. And from our imagination, you know, forming something new. And in the work that I do, I'm really challenging people, and I challenge, you know, things that I teach people, I'm also teaching myself. So I am by no means an expert, but, you know, every day just really challenging myself to think about, you know, be a possibility thinker. And what could life look like if I felt happy as opposed to feeling sad? You know, and I know those are things you talk about, the 10 minutes, the places to check my mindset every day. But it's really about, you know, spending some quiet time every day. And this is something that a practice that I put into place when we entered into lockdown last year, was really taking the first hour of every day. And I'm a person of faith, so I read the Bible, but also in journaling. And part of the journaling is where the creativity is, the envisioning of, you know, what do I really want my life to look like today? You know, and what does that feel like? And just really closing my eyes and feeling what it would be like to have, you know, a win in something that I was doing, you know, and I work out 5 days a week. So what does it feel like to have a really good workout? I'm going to invest 30, 40, maybe 50 minutes. But what does it feel like to really have a good workout and envision that? And I never really had done a lot of that. I'm more of an analytical person. So that, to me, creativity is really using our imagination and then putting our imagination and creating something new, which is a new version of ourselves.
Yeah, that's, you just answered the next question I was going to ask, was that always something that came easy to you? Because that's a lot of where I see people get blocked on, is because there's so much stuck in the concrete, on the what we see and what's happening and whatever circumstances are happening around us, which aren't always pleasant. So it can be difficult for people to kind of see their way through, because there's always a but this, but that. There's nothing ever good that follows the word but. There's always, you know, an excuse or something. So yeah, so this is kind of like a newer thing for you to be able to really dive into your imagination, you're saying.
Well, it is, Hollis, you know, and I think some of it is not understanding what I would call the system that we're involved in, you know, and I think as I reflect back on myself, is I took so much of it literally, as opposed to when I tell people now, I'm like, take your things, we'll just take your education, for example. Just take it as a foundation. It's a platform for lifelong learning. You know, math class, you may not like it, but it's about learning how to think logically and thinking through problem solving. You know, and you know, when you read stories, it's about really, in English class and writing, that's really about invoking your creativity. But I think our system uses things, and I, you know, we tend to get caught up in just staying inside the box. And it can be, you can just stay inside that mediocre box and years can go by. And that, I speak for myself. I wasn't creative enough. And now I'm really being intentional about being creative and, you know, awakening those sparks inside of me for the things that I like to do. You know, it may be that I don't think that I'm good at painting, but why not try it? You know, why not see if I have a creative art expression? And I never wouldn't have done that even 10 years ago.
Yeah, I think it's a very important point to make. And it's a lot of what I say within my company, within I Am Creative. But being an art teacher for 30 years and getting that label and going to art school, and it would make me nuts, which is my which is my slogan that creativity goes beyond a pencil and a paintbrush. Because as soon as people, you know, you go through your, what do? People say, I can't draw a straight line. I'm like, good. I'm glad. Like, straight lines are kind of boring. And, you know, there are so many different kinds of lines to make. And they're like, I can't paint. I'm like, neither can I. Like, I went to art school, but that's not my thing. That's not my expression. It's not my voice. So what I found through my whole 30 years of teaching was I found this consistent message that I was kind of trying to get through and help empower people to understand is that creativity is your voice. That's how I define it, is it's your voice. It's your, it's what feels like comes naturally to you. And you just get into that zone, you get into that space. But it also is that space, like you just said, where you can pick some, you use the example of picking up a paintbrush, even though that might not be your thing, but you want to explore it because you're interested in it. It's like, I like to sing. I kind of suck at it, but I like to just go around with my daughter and I singing at the top of our lungs because it's fun. Mm-hmm. And because it feels good.
It's kind of like that picture of the child dancing in the rain and jumping in the puddles, you know?
Right. It's like allowing yourself to use your imagination, like you say, to be playful, to see yourself, like you use the example of exercising and seeing what that would feel like. So you can actually, you're envisioning it in order to make it come to life.
Yeah, and you know, I think, again, these are just, I could say, lessons that I learned after I thought I knew it all, is that we are creative beings. And I think society puts us in this structure, and then we don't really step into our thought potential and our human potential to use it as just a framework or a building block to build the rest of our life. That's just some of what I have just, you know, really been reflecting on. And because, you know, like you said, singing with your daughter, and my daughter and I were in the car yesterday coming back from the grocery store at the top of our lungs singing a song that we both knew. It was so much fun. But, you know, too, is just, it is to have the joy of a child, you know, and somewhere along the line, we lose all of that. We get too serious. We get judgmental. And, you know, really to be, you know, I think to me, too, some of the things this, with what our country's gone through here this last year, is just really to embrace everybody's differences and stop being, our culture causes us to be so judgmental, and to let it be. We're supposed to be different. And how great is that? And let's get a little bit more childlike and enjoy the moments that we're here on planet Earth and the moments that we're interfacing with other people instead of being so serious all the time. And you know, I just call it getting, you know, I've really learned to get over myself.
Get over ourselves, exactly. So I was going to ask you, so like within the business realm, in the different spaces that you were, and one of the fun facts I didn't get to read, which I wanted to read, was about the, your most interesting pivot came when you inherited a medical marijuana grow and became one of the first licensed farms in your county?
Yes.
Tell us about, well, I guess I kind of jumped from thought to thought, but okay, I want you to get to that, but let me jump to the first part of what I was going to say, which was in those spaces that you were in the business space, did you feel like you could be, I know you said that you were restricted, but did you have a lot of creativity that you felt like you could put in and they kind of didn't allow it to happen, or you did you just, you know, was it just not kind of flowing out at the time?
I think it wasn't, you know, it really wasn't flowing out at the time. And I was in sales. And so in sales, we had formulas. You know, these are the things you say to customers. This is what we do. My creativity always came with a lot with storytelling. I enjoy talking with people. I love people. And so I always would incorporate a lot of that in relationship building and sales. And as a result of that, I was able to migrate to larger customer sales, which were built upon relationships. And I enjoyed that. That allowed us some creativity within that. But, you know, the reality is it's not, you know, a job, even as a professional, you know, is you're you're manufacturing results. You know, it's, and you're operating within a custom, you know, you're operating within a framework, and your whole goal is to bring profits to the shareholders in a big corporation. You know, that's what you're doing, is you're creating work that creates profits. And you know, when you start to understand that's what a job is, then you that's where I say the lessons learned is like, okay, that was what it was, and it was good, but then outside of that, what did I need to do to fuel my passions? And I never did much of that until this season of my life, because I never really thought about it much.
Right, because you were go. When we had spoken before, you were on planes a lot, leaving your kids behind, you know, with your husband, because you were traveling for work. So there was just a lot of moving time.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but I think that's an important point to bring out too, that even within that, that creative aspect of storytelling within sales, because there is that structured framework that you're mentioning, but you were able to bring your personality through and your strength through that storytelling aspect, which gave you a greater connection to a lot of people and allowed you to move up.
Well, one of the things that I did learn, again, later in my career, and as I was moving up through, you know, through sales management, was when I went down to sit with a customer, we had a great product. We were one of the leaders in the industry. We had a great product, we had a great service, but they had a need, and then most of the time as I was in executive management, they had a problem. And so it was all, you know, I learned to just walk in and say, hey, let's talk about what's bothering you. You know, I know what we can do, and we're going to fix this today. But let's really talk about you and what your concerns are, so that, you know, you going to your higher-ups, we come out of this meeting and we've got a plan that's going to make everybody comfortable. And that took me a long time, because it wasn't about the stuff. And then what was so interesting is that a customer just wants to have their needs met. They want to look good in front of their management team. And then then the solution comes, then they're ready to write you the check, you know, as opposed to just always feature benefit. You know, this is the features of the products. This is what we do. And so, you know, a lot of that took me years to develop, but I would say that was more the creative end of things. As I was maturing through my career, was really going, we're really in a people business, and we need to go out and see how we can help these people.
That's like the words that just came to me as you were talking, is you were actually listening to people. And it was, you were humanizing. You were just talking person to person, listening to actually what they're saying, and then figuring out how that you can help solve their issue. And people, like you say, they want to be heard. They want to feel safe. They want to feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm. So. Right. And that's, I think, just a life lesson, you know, as we walk through life, that everybody wants to be heard and everybody has a story to tell. And sometimes the most powerful thing we can do is listen.
So as we kind of move up into how you got to this next level and stage in your life, tell us about the medical marijuana,
adventure.
Yeah, tell us about that, because you inherited, how did that happen?
Well, my late husband was a chiropractor, and the ironic thing about it, he played college football and he had a tree service. So unfortunately, he wound up with a bad back, and he had some injuries, and he had a back surgery that did not go well. And back in 2012, the mode of operation was basically copious amounts of opioids. And he was a guy that was committed to his health, you know, didn't take drugs, worked out. So they got him addicted to opioids, which in itself was a whole nother topic of discussion. And my heart goes out to any people and any families involved in that. And I know it's still going on today, but it's a nightmare. And it's a nightmare both for the patient and it's a nightmare for the family. But we had a patient who owned some medical dispensaries in the Portland area, which were legal. And he said, hey, you know, guys, you've got farm buildings, and you know, let's take a look at, you know, converting one of these farm buildings into medical marijuana. And where we were in time at that point was the point where Oregon was also moving into recreational. So my husband, who could no longer work, that became his project of building out this facility. And going into that, I was running the practice. We had two locations with associate doctors, so I wasn't really involved in it whatsoever. And then he passed away, I lost the practice, and I found myself locked in probate, which means I was locked onto the property. I couldn't do anything. So I inherited the medical marijuana grow farm. And one of the things that happened to me, and the reason I chuckle is at this time we were moving from the medical, which had been legal in Oregon for many, many years, to the recreational was coming in, and they were bundling them together, and the state didn't even know what they were doing. And so I went to the county and said, okay, here's what's going on. I'm kind of caught in this in between of where we're going. And they're like, well, we are too, because we're in the middle of the laws are being changed literally, you know, like they're being written every week. And so they said, I said, well, look, here's my story. I said, I'm my children's only parent. I said, I need to make sure that my operation is legal. I need to make sure that it's safe. And I need to make sure that, you know, everything is perfect. And they said, well, if you will work with us as we're going through all these laws, we'll put you through as the first facility under our licensing program. So that was where I was. And what happened to me, the part that was funny, is because it had been in the shady area where nobody, you know, contractors, you know, people who come in and do your electrical, your air conditioning, all those kind of work, you know, they didn't want to be known that they were working for somebody in the industry, because at that point it was kind of viewed as shady. But then all of a sudden we flipped over and everybody was becoming the contractors for those in the marijuana industry. So it was crazy, but I didn't know anything about it. So that's where I said I had to learn this industry. I said, okay, if I'm stuck here, I've got to figure out what I'm doing first from a legal standpoint. And then I wound up on TV, which was funny about that. I didn't realize I was being filmed at a county meeting and people calling to say that. Well, we wondered what happened to you, Sue. Like, yeah, I'm growing weed. You know, I had learned all the licensing, and then I had to learn about growing the product, and I met some really interesting, wonderful people. And I was just sharing the story the other day. My parents were, of course, helping me through all the transition, and they were in New Jersey at the time. And my mom came out to stay with me, and she went off to Fred Meyer's one day and comes back with a whole tie-dye gear and a head thing. And she's like, oh, I just want to fit in. I want to look like some of the trimmers. I'm like, oh my goodness gracious. But it was fun. It's a very hard business. You know, people look at the potential profitability in it and think it's easy. It's not easy. And I had an indoor facility, which means that we operated 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. And you know, when other people weren't working, I was working. And it was just really hard. I never worked so hard in my life. I learned a lot. I'm no longer involved in that industry. It was too much for me. But you know, it was an interesting point of time, and it was an interesting to be in the infancy of something and watching the legislative process and then being on committees that were involved with that as the laws were being formed and giving input to the whole process, and you know, just seeing our state come through that. So it was a real interesting learning experience. I literally smelled like marijuana for almost 4 years. I couldn't even smell it anymore. My car. So everything smelled, you know, it was so funny. And then I'd walk in someplace and people would look at me and go, no, she can't be the one that smells like weed, you know. anyway, it was an adventure. It was really an adventure. But I met some wonderful people. And, you know, I met some folks whose families have been involved in the business. They were fourth generation. And legalization was really important to them, important for them, for their children, to be legitimate business people. And it was a whole different perspective than, you know, what the media gave it. A lot of very hardworking people, you know, some of them hippie-like, you know, some of them not, you know, just all different walks of life. But I met a lot of really great folks in that season.
Yeah. God, you really have lived so much in this lifetime. You've had so many experiences. And I guess going back to that first, you know, initial question I mentioned to you of time, I mean, who knew? I mean, if you knew that all of this was kind of going to be unraveling, you'd be like, what? You know, when you were early on in your other business careers, you know, life just kind of happens and things happen and you go with it and you figure it out and you meet so many amazing people along the way so often.
Right. And you know, Hollis, and I, when I speak and I share my story too from a, in a business context, because, you know, what I'm trying to do is open up people's mind is that we all need to be financially free. And it's not about the stuff, it's more about the time. And if I would have known that, you know, my husband was going to die at 51, I certainly, you know, we would have lived our life totally differently, because it's all about the time. When my children and I, we get together, you know, we're sitting around a table talking, they talk about things that we did as a family. They don't talk about the stuff. You know, they don't really ever talk about, you know, the quads or the farm or the RV or the truck or the boat. They talk about the things that we did when we were doing those things. And it becomes, you really realize the value of time with the people that you love and what's going to allow you to create those memories. And, you know, I look back on my corporate career and, you know, again, now being in my 50s, although I'm blessed to have my health, I said those were the best years of my life from being a young person, you know, and I gave away the best days of the and the best years of my life to a corporation who didn't really care. And I would have structured things differently. I would have embarked on a way to create finances so that I could have spent more time with my children. And I could have, you know, we could have done more things as a family. You know, I just would have looked at life differently because life is about experience and it's about creating memories.
Yeah. Which actually leads into the second question very well is how do you incorporate creativity into your own life?
Well, to me, like I said, you know, the one thing that I have started every day, which has been a very difficult discipline, for me, sitting quiet in a chair first thing in the morning is been almost painful. Now I'm starting to look forward to it. But really, you know, is envisioning my life and, you know, saying, who do I want to be? What do I want to accomplish? What do I want to look like? And what does that feel like? And, am I moving closer to that goal or further away from that? And what other things do I need to do to create the provision in order to be able to live my life the way that I need to? And my daughter and I were just working on that, you know, yesterday, because I'm going to be expanding part of my company in order to be able to do some other things for ourselves and to build a legacy. But my biggest thing for me is to be able to create memories with my family. I now have a 2-year-old grandson that my daughter and her husband have blessed me with. But for us to be able to spend more time together and doing things, traveling. I want to travel with my family and see things and experience things, experience other cultures together. So that for me is really, what does that look like? And, you know, what could it look like in a world of possibilities? And then, you know, for me too, it's about what causes that pull at my heartstrings can I affect in a big way and make a difference, to make a difference in the lives of the people that they're supporting. And that's something that's really important to me as well.
I really like how you pointed out sitting in a chair quietly, that it's something that you've incorporated into your routine, but it's not easy. But it's become something that you look more forward to. I think that that's just such an important point to kind of highlight and put exclamation points next to, because this is something that is really allowing yourself to connect with yourself. And it's not always a comfortable place, and it's not always a place of, yay, let's do this, because it can be really uncomfortable at times, but it's setting the time to do it. And then when it becomes more of a routine, then it's something that you look more forward to, but it's not always immediate.
No, it's not. And, you know, when I talk to people about journaling, my mentor had always said, if you can't do it at the end of the day, and I'm not a night person, so that's why I usually just do it in the beginning of the day, is to spend some time reflecting back on yesterday. You know, what went well, what didn't go so well. And, you know, sometimes you'll go, man, yesterday just stunk. You know, it just, nothing went the way that I wanted it to. I got really frustrated. And, you know, when you journal that out, it's almost freeing. You know, you write it down, pen to paper, write it out. It's like, oh, okay, I got rid of that. What can I learn from that? You know, it, you know, so that, you know, we talked about the other day, failing forward. So yesterday felt a little bit like a failure, but I can fail forward with that. If I look at that, reflect on that and say, okay, how can I use that to make today better? and, you know, writing that out to yourself. And I think one of the hardest lessons, at least for myself, is to really do a true assessment of where I'm at. You know, where am I really at? How do I really feel? You know, because a lot of times it's, I don't feel so good in these different areas, or I feel like I'm not achieving what I should be achieving, you know, in different areas of our life. And really doing that true self-assessment is really important, so that you know where you're at, and then you think about where you want to go, but it's those pieces that connect so you can put a plan in place to get there.
Yeah. What do you think of that whole thing? As you were saying that, I'm envisioning, because at times I know I'm totally guilty of this, where I'll be thinking of something and then it's like, yes, this is how I feel. And I can feel it in my gut, like, yes. And then part of me is like, well, do you really feel that way? Is that really happening? And then I start to question and I'm like, what are you doing? Because you know what your gut is feeling, and that's always the one that's right.
Right. Well, and it's true. And I think too, to be able to be honest with ourselves, and that is, you know, everybody, there's so much about positivity. And I believe that, you know, I believe happiness is a decision. In a way, you can talk yourself into feeling more joy than feeling more sorrow. But I think too, to allow yourself to be free to go, I'm really, you know, this is causing me pain. This is making me feel really sad. Or this is really frustrating, the wad anatomy, and I could choke somebody right now, you know, but being okay, because we have those feelings. And I think one of the things is we have to allow ourselves to be okay with having those feelings. It's like, okay, I can have those feelings. I don't need to dwell on them, and I don't need to necessarily execute them all, but I can recognize what causes me to feel this way. And then you could say, you know, I don't like feeling that way. I don't like, you know, when somebody gets, you know, when I can be short-tempered, for example. So one of the things that I've really learned about myself, and I think I always knew it, but I really know it and I really watch it now, is I can be short-tempered when I'm tired. So I just be careful when I'm tired to make sure that I'm not having any deep discussions with people that may lead down areas of conflict, because it's not a good place for me. You know, but that's okay. I now know that, and I'll go, let's talk about this tomorrow morning. Let's get a good night's sleep and we'll talk about this tomorrow morning, you know, and knowing that that's going to have a better outcome.
Well, it's smart. And I think what you said is true. It's important to express instead of repress, because you need to admit life isn't unicorns and butterflies all the time. So you need to express it, but then take the steps as to moving forward, as to what you want and how to move forward, like you said, failing forward. And I totally get that idea of recognizing basically where your strengths and weaknesses, but more so, you know, how you're feeling. And like you said, you can be short-tempered when you're hungry or when you're tired. I just tied that into what I was thinking of, because my son gets really, really, like, you can't even talk to him. He's literally that Snickers commercial. He'll get so irrational. And then I'll stop and say, like, have you eaten today? He's like, no. I'm like, just eat. Like, I'm not talking to you anymore. I don't understand why I just went down this whole rabbit hole with you. I got sucked in. And after he ate, he's just like, yeah, sorry about that.
yeah. We as humans are funny creatures.
We are. I wanted to ask you this, and I don't know if you can talk about it before we get to the third question, but you'd mentioned that you said to your daughter that there's an expansion off of your business that you're creating. Or can you talk about that now, or is that a work in progress?
I'm actually going to do an actual coaching company. It's going to be called Coaching with Sue. And I'm going to, in that, offer extensive one-on-one coaching. I'm going to create some classes that we're going to, content courses that we're going to put up on a coaching platform. And so I'm going to really put some formality behind it so that people can go ahead and engage with me in that, outside of the people that just engage with me inside of the business opportunity. Inside of our business opportunity, because of that, I do that coaching. But the way that I get paid through compensation is through the business itself. So this is a way that somebody who says, hey, you know, that business is a great tool, but it's not the tool for me. I'd love to just take part in your coaching services. We're going to create a separate company for that, which I think makes tons of sense, because there are people that, you know, would love to learn some of the things that we're learning, and I know we can add a lot of value to, so that's what we're going to be doing.
Wonderful. Congratulations. Excited for your new ventures.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, okay. So moving to the third question, which is basically kind of a wrap up and touching up on things that we have already said, but why do you think creativity is important?
I think creativity is essential because, you know, we are, that's what makes us, I think, different than other species. You know, it makes us different than, you know, than a dog. We as human beings, we have a creativity inside of us. And, you know, those are the desires that are written on our heart that we all have. And like I said, I think that life and the structure of the world can sometimes, you know, beat it out of us in a way, exhaust us, you know. And again, I speak from my own experiences. You know, when I was in corporate, I was a machine, you know, and then I had a young family, I was busy. And, you know, I didn't really have any bandwidth for creativity, but that lasted and that took 20 years of my life. And when I speak to a younger person today, I said, evaluate how you'd like to do and how would you like to live? That's really the question we all need to ask ourselves. How do you want to live your life and what does it really look like? And I want you to take the constraints of time, money, and what you're doing today off the table. But close your eyes and said, if I could build my dream life and I would wake up, what would it look like? Where would you wake up? You know, would you wake up someplace different? Would you live someplace different? You know, what would your day look like? What would be the things that you would do? And all of that is creativity, Hollis. It's thinking, it's tapping into our feelings. And again, like you talked about your strengths, those areas of our strengths are those areas that energize us. And John Maxwell, who I love his material, and he mentors our organization, he talks about, you know, in our areas of our strengths are where we can achieve excellence. And it's not in our areas of weakness. And yet in our areas of weakness is where society tells us, oh, keep doing it. Spend all that time. You know, you got to kill yourself to get a C in science. And he says, hogwash. You know, don't spend your time there. Hire somebody else to get you a C in science. You know, but go in that area of your strength and become excellent. And when we're excellent, that's where we really add value to the world. And, you know, to try to find within each of us as unique, beautiful beings that God created us to be is to really step into that creative expression. You know, whether it's singing or dancing or talking or, you know, whatever it is, to really find that thing within you to make a lasting imprint on this world. And to not, you know, we don't know how much time we have, but to make a difference so that people go, oh, yeah, you know, I loved being with Hollis. She impacted my life. She made a difference. You know, I knew Sue and she made a difference in my life. That's what I want people to say, you know, that their life was better because I lived or I was with them in a season. You know, that's what I want. And that's what I want for all of us. And, you know, I'm saying that we can have it. We're just not programmed to have it. You know, we were created for excellence and the world programs us for mediocrity. And where I want to challenge people to say is every single person was created for excellence in some way, and everybody has value and has unique things and a unique story that the world needs to hear. And we need to really embrace that and free people.
Oh my gosh. Amen. Thank you for, yes, yes. Because I tell the story so often. Amazing friend of mine, she is an incredible second grade teacher, like the kind that you would want your child to have. She is so hands-on, so imaginative, so has the kids moving and just learning, real experiential learning. And she's taken a lot of art classes, does a lot of book classes, does a lot of a whole bunch of stuff, which she really enjoys, but it never completely resonated that in her mind of what she thought, you know, that was her creative thing. But then she realized that teaching is her creative expression, that she still enjoys all of these things, but her true strength, like you're saying, really is her power of excellence is really in the classroom. and how she interacts with the students and how she comes up with her lessons and how she executes them and all of that. And she said once she realized that, it was like a weight was lifted off of her shoulders. It was just like, oh, it's like finding your purpose or recognizing your purpose. So when I heard this, I'm like, yes, yes, and yes, because we all have it. And I feel like we're always looking outside of ourselves instead of within ourselves. Because there's this traditional idea of what it is. And if you don't fit that mold, then, well, then I'm not a creative person. But the definition of creativity, if you look it up in the dictionary, is the formation of an idea or an object. We do that all the time. So it's just people light up. And I like you saying all of these things, words that kind of stood out to me were allowing, imagination, feelings, energize. Just so powerful.
Well, and I think it's things like this, Hollis, and this is why I love your podcast, is, you know, you just challenge people to start to think. You know, our society is not teaching us how to think anymore. I don't know if it ever did, but, you know, or haven't for a long time. But our young people aren't being taught to think and to question, you know, always ask why, you know, why? Why are we doing this? And that's why I love this podcast, is that you've got people from all different walks of life coming on and talking about creativity and all their different areas that they're in and different spaces that they are in. And it gets a person thinking like, oh, wow, me too. I could do that, you know, inside of my space. You talk about your friend that's a teacher. We need people. And I can reflect back on great teachers that I had who always just inspired me. And, you know, at one point I actually thought I wanted to be a teacher, because I had some great college professors. I'm like, I love these people. These are awesome. I'd love to do that. But it just, they inspire people. You know, when people are in their strength zone, when they're living out their purpose and adding value to people, they inspire us, you know, and awaken that still small voice within us to go, I was created for something more.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the kind words. And yes, thank you for... It's, you know, I spoke to a biologist in the space, and he said to me, somebody I know from high school, and we haven't spoken in like 30 some years. And he's like, I still don't know, Hollis, why you invited me into the space. And as we were talking more, I was like, why are you a biologist? Like, what do you like about it? And he said, well, when I look into the microscope, it's sexy. Like the colors and the shapes and the way the designs, it comes together. And his voice, his tone totally changed. From instead of being this kind of questioning, he started to sound more passionate about it. And I was like, well, that's exactly what we're talking about. Like, we're talking about, like, as you're putting it, your strength, your passions. Like, I'm like, I'm amazed at what you do. I mean, you're looking at these molecules and all of this stuff and making sense of it and coming up with... you know, solutions to things. And I mean, that's amazing to me. I mean, that's incredibly creative. So yeah, I just felt inspired to share that.
Oh, that's, you know, and that's awesome. And that's, you know, goes back to one of the things that I've been really trying to be intentional about as I meet different people is about them, you know. And I love the, why do you do that? You know, why are you a biologist? You know, when you ask somebody why they do something else, and all of a sudden you get this, you know, this answer. I connected with a friend of mine from high school. It'll be 40 years in June that I hadn't spoken to him, and he's an accountant. I said, why are you an accountant? He goes, oh my gosh, I just love tax law. And I was like, oh my goodness. I don't know if anybody, I've heard somebody say that. And then, you know, he was just sharing on how fascinating it was. And I was just like you said, his whole tone of voice just completely, he was energized and passionate about that. And I said to him, I said, we need people like you to be excited and passionate about tax law so that we all make sure that we're abiding by it correctly. You know?
Exactly. And, so we can go to you.
Go.
Yes. So we can go to you and say, please help us, because this is totally overwhelming and making me nuts. and this is your happy space. So, Sue, this has been so wonderful, and I appreciate everybody who's jumping on. We're getting to the top of the hour, but Sue, can you please tell people how they can find you and connect with you?
Yes. Well, again, thank you for having me. Thank you, everybody who's taken the time to listen to this. And I would encourage you, if you haven't gone back, go back and listen to some of Hollis's previous episodes. She's spent some time with some amazing people. I know I've only gotten through about half of them, but I've enjoyed every single one. For myself, it's the easiest way to get connected with me is to use my Bend Project website. So it's www.bendproject.com, and when you hit the landing page up there, one of the first things it'll say is connect with me, book an appointment. If you hit that button, you can schedule a free phone call with me or a Zoom call with me, and let's just connect, and we'll say hi, and just to get to know each other. No commitment to do anything, but I'd love to talk with you further. So that's the easiest way to get a hold of me. And then for those of you who are listening, I'm on social media, the LinkedIn platform, I'm Sue Thoens, Thoens, Facebook the same. And then if you want to send me an email, it's thebendproject@gmail.com. So would love to connect with everybody, would love to hear your thoughts, and just would love to get to know each and every one of you, and see how we can add value to each other's lives, and hear your story.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I'm going to put all of that information into the bio when I post this by tomorrow. So Sue, you are an incredible being, and thank you for all that you put out into this world. And listeners, so appreciate you being here live, catching the replay, taking this hour to spend with us. This space is all about inspiring each other, connecting and sharing, and hearing different perspectives. So please like, follow, share, so we can get this out into the world. And as Sue so kindly put out there, like, really kind of, I challenge you to sit with yourself, and it may be uncomfortable, but sit with yourself and really imagine the life that you want, where you want to be, what you want to do, all of that stuff. And give yourself a 30-day challenge and work through it. Set a time and just do it. So 10 minutes, it's all you need. So I wish you a wonderful morning, afternoon, evening, wherever you are in this world. And we'll be talking to you really soon. So goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody. Thank you.